Call recording on.
Listen, I'm sorry I missed on Monday. My flight was delayed. I was coming back from visiting some relatives on Easter holiday.
Where'd you go?
I was down in Atlanta. I had a couple cousins I was down to see. I'm back here. I'm in, if you're in Manhattan, I'm not too far from where you're at. I'm down in South Jersey, about an hour away.
Yeah, right now I'm in Union Square. I did a lecture at New York Film Academy.
Okay.
And I timed it so I could give you a call at 6.
Fantastic. Yeah, I got a couple questions for horrornews.net. You'd like to put out on the website.
I'm a big fan of your site.
Oh, really? Cool. I'm glad. Before I start with any questions about the black waters of Echo's Pond, I just wanted to, I'm a big fan of your dad's work. And
cool.
The one of my favorite movies from the 1980s, and don't laugh, but it's Blame It on Rio.
Oh, it's pretty good to say Alligator 2. Then I would have laughed.
That movie, him and Michael Caine made a great team, and I host weekend movie nights, me and my buddies, and I swear through the years, it's been my turn to pick a movie, several times I think Blame It on Rio has been chosen,
can you believe how fun that movie is? I lived in Rio when my dad shot that film, and I was with my Italian Catholic grandmother who slept in the bed next to me that would never let me go out at night because I always wanted to go to Ipanema at night because they would shoot these scenes in the clubs, and the women were so beautiful then that the Brazilian thong had just been invented. But I was only 12 at the time. And of course I was writing love letters to Michelle Johnson.
I think we all were. I was going to ask if you were even allowed to watch the movie,
Yeah, I did. And it was really great to see such great comedy so close up. I mean, many people do not know Michael Caine for his comedic ability,
Yeah.
And it was really, really fun experience. I was actually out of school for about 4 months. I had a tutor. And that was, Demi Moore back in the pre-Ashton days. And
right,
it was
right,
a really fun cast.
Definitely. I completely envy you because, as far as, I'm a big fan of 80s movies, and that's on the top of my list. So,
That and my favorite year, I think, is probably my dad's best comedies.
Yeah. Your dad did some great work. I know, I want to get to the Black Waters, but I just had to ask, your dad influenced you a lot in your acting and directing, I guess?
Well, you know, what's so funny is that, my parents are world-renowned playwrights. You go to Samuel French Bookstore and you'll see, a whole shelf of all their plays, and they really are like legends of comedy. My mom was in the original Producers, the movie, the show The Nanny and all that. And, comedy is so in my blood, but, for me it was horror. I've always been a fan of all the old school horror movies. And my parents were still asking me, what the hell happened in my childhood for me to be so depraved in my work? But that's their thing. And I do really believe that horror has timing to it, like comedy. All your best horror movies will have some perfect moment of release, where you can laugh, and kind of purge your fears for a moment in time.
Yeah, it's got to be like, you know, a roller coaster ride, you know, bring you all different places. And I think all movies are like that, but horror's got to be like that too, you know. I was reading the bio that they sent, and it said that you were inspired by reading a history book for the whole concept of Black Waters of Echo's Pond. What's the story about that?
Well, you know, I learned that the ancients believed that board games were inherently supernatural and were worshipped. What other inanimate object could elicit laughter, camaraderie, contempt, but a board game? And I just had that mulling in my head. I remember reading about it. I don't know if it was in college or I just remember reading about it. And then I went to the next step and I said, what would happen if the killer was you? Really, and anybody.
Right.
Because you hear about murders that happen between friends or husbands and wives. What if it's a girlfriend? But you never hear about the blow-by-blow events that happened just prior.
Right.
What happens there? What makes people snap? Because I don't think people are born murderers. I think they become them.
I have to agree with that.
So I almost looked at it like, if I can find a way to have some type of game that brings about these type of insecurities and kind of, you know, augments people's fears, frustrations with one another, in the right circumstances, maybe, I wanted to show that anybody could be a killer.
Yeah. Yeah, When I first heard about, the movie, a while ago, I thought to myself, it's going to be like the evil Jumanji, you know? But, I mean, it's so much more than that, you know? I mean, it's obviously, it's, such a great, cast, and, you know, the name that keeps coming up is, Sean Clark, as being an important role in getting this put together. How important was he to get this movie, you know, all like, you know, latched up?
Well, I really imbibed every aspect of Sean's involvement because he has a real integrity with horror.
Yeah.
And many directors shun a writer, especially one that rewrites their own script. I love the rewrite that he did to my script. And I kept him by me the whole time. And we really were a team.
Excellent.
What I like so much about what he did to my script is he did not change a single word of dialogue except augment the horror. Now, I don't know what the heck happened to him as a child to be so depraved, but he really, you know, turned the ratchet on, you know, innovative kills and fright scenarios in the movie. Yeah. On top of that, he, like myself, is a real, you know, follower of all old school horror. So I asked him to give me some alliteration to some great horror movies that are in the film. And some of it's almost comical that he came up with, and all of which are in the film. I developed this game. I based it on ancient Greek mythology.
Right.
But he chose to make the god Pan come alive and kind of be some puppet master pulling the strings behind the scenes, and it really worked. So, you know, we were a good team, and you know, it's this funny thing about writing partners. It's just like a crew, you know. They fit like a puzzle or they don't, you know.
And that's it. You said about old horror movies that you guys came up with. Which horror movies were they?
Can I plead the fifth, as I don't want to give any spoilers to the fans out there?
Okay, sure. Well, let me ask you a different question. What are some of your favorite old horror movies?
Well, I'm a big fan of the Evil Dead movies. I really loved that it had humor and it had gore, and there was a sense of place that comes with a wide shot. And a lot of horror movies now are so intricate in their extreme close-ups and their quick cuts that they lose sight of the big picture. And sometimes just a story alone is scary. You know, I mean, the original Omen, I mean, the story alone is terrifying. And that movie was a tremendous influence to me. And these were films that really scared people with theme, scared people with content. And, you know, the idea of something can haunt you far more than the technique or the execution of that idea. And that's, to me, why I'm a big fan of old school horror. I know it's not commercial for me to mention that I like Dario Argento's, you know, old school stuff, but I liked how expressionistic he was. You know, I had an entirely Italian camera crew. My DP, Massimo Zeri, who worked with Fellini and De Sica and so many great masters, his influences had a lot to do with Italian horror, too. And even in the lighting of the movie, it grows abstract towards the end, because it's kind of representing some great turmoil that our lead character is going through.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, there's, you know, very few and far between these days movies that match up to the horror movies of, like, the 70s, like The Omen, Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist. Like, those three movies right there are three movies that gave me nightmares. Or, like,
the idea gave you nightmares.
The idea gave you nightmares.
It resonated with you.
Right. It didn't
It wasn't connecting the dots to the idea. It wasn't the technique or the execution of that idea. And
right.
Sometimes, to our detriment, people just shoot the technique and the execution, but without the idea, and tell you it's scary.
You mentioned Dario Argento. It's funny, I was just at the Monster Mania Con, I think two, three weeks ago. I met, he was there. He was the guest of honor. And I had the honor of meeting him for the very first time. And what a great guy he is.
Very humble?
Oh, yeah, very, very soft-spoken. I mean, he, and very fan-friendly. I mean, he was, aside from, you know, what he, you know, was, you know, doing, like, you know, sitting down and doing the autographs, you know, after that, you know, in the bar, you know, having a drink with talking to, like, you know, fans, I mean, his English isn't the best, but, you know, I mean, he gets his point across.
Yeah, and he uses beauty to get his point across. He uses the frailty of femininity to get his point across. You know, he did a lot of things that are now, you know, par for the course in horror. And in many ways, he was an innovator in that. He kind of showed what people were feeling inside, which is what I kind of liked about the Italian horror masters. And, you know, I made this movie not as an homage to Dario Argento, but there's a piece of him in there. And the expressionism of an emotion that goes into a murder comes really from Dario Argento and liking his movies. And to me, the fact that these are friends killing you. Sorry, the phone is clicking. Someone's calling, but I'm not picking up. The fact that friends are killing each other, the imagining of a friend of mine, a best friend of mine, tying me up and torturing me over issues that have come to a boil over years of friendship, to me is terrifying because you know your killer. And so much of horror has been about faceless murders. And I think years of kind of studio run-of-the-mill horror movies has desensitized us to really getting to know our characters. And that's why I was very adamant in creating a very archetypal, you know, character arc. Really, everyone in the movie, every single character has a cross to bear, a gripe, predilection, good qualities, foibles, and they all reflect in the way they run from their killer, and they all have something to do with them ultimately becoming a killer.
You have a great cast, and you know, I don't want to pick favorites, but Danielle Harris, she's got to be like one of the hardest working females in the horror genre these days. I mean, she's, you know, from the, you know, Rob Zombie Halloween movies to, you know, she's just in everything, it seems like. What kind of energy did she bring to the table for your film?
I wrote the role of Kathy as a grieving victim who has problems finding enjoyment in life due to a very traumatic episode that she had not been able to get over. And Danielle Harris brought an entirely different person to the table. And she played the character almost as a villain, a very angry, vindictive person who really has it out for Jimmy Duvall's character, Rick, because she blames him for the death of her brother. And immediately when she took that choice, I knew that was really the way to go, because you can get so bored of a victim so easily from page 1 to page 120. And to start off as somebody who is angry and has the need to clear the air and, you know, like a fierce emotional undercurrent was so strong, and I think all the actors really rallied behind her performance and said, you know, I really have to put emotion into this movie. And, you know, Danielle told me she took the film because of that, because she had an opportunity to put a great deal of emotional range into a genre that lately has been depriving her of that.
Yeah, she's, you know, like I said, she's great. She's, you know, someone I've enjoyed following the past couple of years with the different things she's been doing. But another question, and sometimes I don't get, you know, there might not be an answer to this question, but when filming, like, you know, we're all going to see what happens in front of the camera, but did you have any, like, stumbling blocks or problems, like, you know, during the making, behind the scenes, like anything, like, pop into your mind, like, that, you know, what was a hindrance, maybe, in getting the movie done?
Well, we have this game that we put a great deal of our art department money into, over $30,000 to make, you know, cranks and pinion gears and aged oak,
right.
You know, just an amazing creation. Yet, on the day of shooting, we all realized that a very integral scene that had to match an important moment in the script is when a burst of light shoots out of the game.
Right.
So with very little time, we're trying to bash a hole through this oak, you know, creation, this beautiful piece of artwork, to find a way to shoot light through it. A crew member ended up getting an axe and finally smashing through it. The art director found a Tupperware container, filled it with water, and Sean and I got Alka-Seltzer tablets, tons of them, that we found next door at the gas station for sale, and we threw it in. And when the camera rolled, it looked like this piercing, bubbling portal from the hell. There is no CGI with that gorgeous streak of light coming out of the game and the watery reflections that come out of it. And that was all because of a, you know, 11th hour scramble.
Right, right. See, that's what I love to hear, you know, that's the kind of little, like, when I'm reading an interview, I love to hear those, like, little, like, you know, we had to use Alka-Seltzer, like, those little tidbits. So, I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, you get an image kind of 100 people on the set, and the writer and the director are going next door, you know, buying Alka-Seltzer. We figured we'd find anything.
Right.
And it really worked. Made this fizzing, twirling thing, you know?
Fantastic. I mean, yeah, that sounds amazing. But I mean, the whole film, but is there a favorite part that you have that you either enjoyed filming or just the finished product when it's done, that, like, you thought that this particular scene is, like, you know, the best point of the film?
I love the sense of space in Pete's house. You know, there was this shanty shack in Malibu that a homeless woman was living in, who kept mumbling during Robert Patrick's close-up. He got so angry, he clenched his shotgun, and he said, "I'm going to shoot the next person I hear talking over my lines."
Right.
Fortunately, this mumbling woman in this shack we shot, you know, didn't talk over his best close-ups. But the way Massimo lit it, and the mist that was going by, it just had such a tremendous sense of space. He does an awesome kill in that scene. And I really like Daniel Harris and Jimmy Duvall's performance in it too, when they confront him, asking for help. You know, her hand's already severed, and Jimmy's, you know, seen enough, and they want to get off the island, and Robert Patrick doesn't believe them that they're the good guys after the mayhem he's witnessed on the island.
Right.
Got an overhanging lamp. I just love that scene.
Okay. I'm not sure how much more time you have.
I don't know if you hear the pigeons, but I'm sitting here in, Union Square.
Okay.
It's kind of relaxing, actually.
That's cool. I got a few more questions. Is Project 8 Films, is that your company?
It's a film, Jason. It's a company Jason Lockridge owns that I joined forces with since the making of the movie, and they have a couple of films in the pipeline. Jason Lockridge is my oldest friend, and it was a real joy to make the movie with him.
Okay. I wasn't, that was one thing I read about, and I wasn't clear if that was, if you were partners in the company with him, or if it was...
Yeah, I am. Okay. I am, and we have another movie coming out called The Tower of Mirrors, horror film.
I read in your bio that you worked with, Francis Ford Coppola. Now, I have, it's interesting, I have the movie THX 1138 on DVD, and that's not one of my favorite movies. There's a documentary as a bonus feature, and the documentary is the How American Zoetrope was created. And it's like an amazing documentary about, like, you know, the beginnings of Coppola and George Lucas and Scorsese and you know, back in that time, and, like, you know, how they started that company. And, I just wanted to, like, you know, bring the background to you in a way, and just, I know your roots are your parents. As far as, like, the directing goes. How did that all start out for you?
Well, I was an actor for 20 years. I had my own TV series when I was 19 on ABC called The Marshall Chronicles. Not Martian, but Marshall Chronicles.
Right, right.
And I always just became fascinated with the craft of directing. I would just marvel at seeing how a director can really turn, you know, something out of nothing. And I'm just so obsessed with the lore of what directors have done. I mean, you look at Coppola, I mean, the extent how he almost lost his sanity making Apocalypse Now. And it's almost like to be a director, and I mean, from living proof, you really are a real-life horror movie, because yeah. It is horrific making movies. Yet, at the end of the day, there's such a release that you've got through the day. We shot this scene with the twins quartering Mircea on this 40-foot-high stone bridge without any cabling. You know, I mean, I kept saying to myself, I pray to God that nobody falls off this thing. It's only about a foot and a half long. A massive fight scene we had to do. Thank God we did the rest of it in CGI. But I mean, to know that you have people's lives literally in your hands, especially working with chainsaws and knives, and you know, it's such a responsibility. And I think you really do have to be somewhat of a horror buff in life just to get through, to have a thick skin, to just get through a single day of shooting as a director.
I mean, it's the one profession that, I love acting and actors and you know, I'm just such a, I'm not just a horror fan, I'm such a movie fan, a fan of film. And, just to know that, like a director job has got to be, I would think, the most rewarding, because it's something that you kind of created, and it's, you know, it's going to be, you know, in a way it's timeless, you know, when we're all gone, you know, the movies are still there, you know, they kind of live on. So, you know, that I envy.
Ivan Pacha, the Czech director, who did a movie that I love very much called Stalin for HBO, he said to me, Gabriel, a movie is a living, breathing organism. And I love that he said that to me, because I really do believe it. It is a living, breathing organism. Because
yeah.
Depending on how, what you're going through in your life is how you will relate to that movie. I mean, Apocalypse Now, in my youth, to Apocalypse Now as an adult, they mean two totally different things, you know?
Right.
And that's why art lives forever. And things that terrify the hell out of you may, later in life, you might find comical, or vice versa. So it's true.
I mean, I think the Black Waters of Echoes Pond is, you know, is a great film, and I think it's gonna, you know, be one of those films that you're remembered for. Everyone who did it
believed in it, and that's what I loved about it. Everyone who was involved in it went the extra 9 yards. I mean, our prosthetics people, I mean, it was like a work of art. I mean, some of the stuff that they did, I would put in a museum. And it was all because they believed in the movie. You know, Robert Patrick, it's like working with someone like him who comes to the set with a whole character that was far greater than you envisioned. It's just a dream come true.
Yeah, I can only imagine, you know, he brought a wealth of knowledge to the table. He's an amazing actor.
Do you live in South Jersey?
I'm sorry, say again?
Do you live in South Jersey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I live right across the bridge from Philadelphia.
I actually stage managed my parents' play, a comedy they wrote called If You Never Leave Me, I'm Going With You, in Red Bank about 2 months ago.
Okay.
Went to the Jersey Shore. It was great.
Oh, okay. What shore did you go to?
Well, I guess wherever Red Bank, New Jersey is.
Okay.
I don't really know South Jersey that well.
There's
a beautiful
yeah.
old pier there. Where
yeah.
they did a show.
Yeah, I love going down to the Jersey Shore. Not so much the MTV's version of what you know the Jersey
yeah,
Shore.
Obviously,
is.
Like one stretch. It's not the entire Jersey Shore, but it's hysterical how people will get something in their head.
Yeah. But you're Italian, right?
Yeah,
I'm Italian, and you know I'm from New Jersey, and I love Italian food, and you know I love pizza. And one thing I read is you have a a brick oven pizza in your home?
Yeah, flew in an architect from Sicily to build it. It's two stories. It's made of lava stone and brick. And it's amazing because, for some reason, it's become a novelty in L.A., and a lot of people just want to eat the pizza made from it. And my pizza-making skills spread across the globe. I was in a film festival in Italy, and they raised their hand. One of the journalists said, "I hear you're a phenomenal pizza chef." And I said, "Oh, can we talk about my movie making ability?"
That's great.
So I have a calling. If I ever choose to not be a director anymore, I even would, you know, bring pizza to the set, and my whole camera department was Italian, and, you know, in Blackwaters we were eating, Italian food all day.
It sounds like you do have a second calling there, I tell you. Do you have a specialty?
I'm sorry, what did you say the phone cut out?
Do you have a specialty pizza, or?
Oh, yeah, no, I can make, caviar, wild salmon, chives, and mascarpone cheese pizza, gorgonzola, radicchio, and filet mignon pizza, camembert cheese, and pomegranate seed pizza.
I think you do have a second calling. I don't want to keep you too long. It's really been amazing talking to you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, good talking to you, man.
I'll have an interview up in a couple days. I'll try to have it by Friday, because I know that's, I think it's the release, right?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'll try to get that up by Friday for you.
Well, definitely tell my dad that you're a fan of Blame It on Rio.
Oh, you have to. It's one of my favorite movies. I love it. Absolutely.
I think it's one of the handsomest he's ever looked, too. He was in his 50s. And, I always thought that that's the best he ever looked in a movie.
I'd have to agree with you. I mean, yeah, he was... a good-looking guy in that movie, and, the dynamic between him and Michael Caine, was amazing.
I'd like to see Michael Caine in more comedies. I can't think of the last time I've seen him in a comedy. And, you know, Stanley Donen, who did Singing in the Rain, directed that, you know?
I didn't know who directed it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, Stanley Donen. I mean, he hadn't made many movies since Singing in the Rain, and then goes and makes an 80s comedy.
Wow. Okay. I never knew that. But
yeah, man, great talking to you.
Yeah. I'll send you I think I have your email. I'll send you a link as soon as it's posted. And then get out.
All right, great.
All right,
have a good night.
All right, enjoy New York.
Thanks, man.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.